This podcast was up for a few days. It didn't get many hits, but I took it down this morning because I want to make it clear that both Susan Ash and I understand that the American Kratom Association, as it is today, is an essential lobbying organization in keeping kratom legal. Lobbying isn't bad, it's just how our system works. Lobbying takes a lot of money. That's just how our system works. Along with the community, which is the primary force, the AKA is responsible for getting these Kratom Consumer Protection Act bills in the state houses and municipal houses. We encourage you, at the end, we show you that you can do your own lobbying, but you can also join with the AKA. They have a Kratom Protectors program. You can sign up, and I'll even give you the donate link. It's AmericanKratom.org/donate. We support that work that they're doing. But Mac Haddle reached out to me. He didn't pressure me or tell me to say anything. He was very polite. He tried to clarify some things, and I appreciate that. But Susan Ash is a part of the Kratom history, and I find this story pretty fascinating and amazing. And we do talk about problems, and I share some of my frustrations. I don't like to pretend they don't exist. It's just a conversation. Don't worry about it. None of the content on this or any episode of the Kratom Science Podcast, Kratom Science Journal Club, or on any page of KratomScience.com is intended, nor should it be considered, medical claims or medical advice.
This is the Kratom Science Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Gallagher, blog and social media writer for KratomScience.com, your source for all things Kratom.
Episode 77.
What happened is I was ousted. I was ousted unfairly. If you can get a meeting with your state representative, you don't need anybody's permission to do that. Seems like people think you need permission.
Part 2 of my interview with Susan Ash, founder and former member of the American Kratom Association.
I think what you wanted to get into a little bit was about the media. We did hire a public relations firm, and I did count at one point, after only being with the AKA for 2 years, I had done 400 media interviews, and nothing like that is being done today. And I often wonder, how do we fill that hole where positive stories or even just balanced stories are out there in the media? You just don't see them anymore. And it was because at the time we had a dedicated public relations firm to help get stories out there, and they did an excellent job. Again, it was because of some of the great generous vendors who made it possible for us to hire them. We hired a group called the Hastings Group, who helped with all of our polls and all of our petitions and things like that. And they helped me. I had professional media trainings. I was having so many interviews, but I needed to have professional training, even though my prior career, I was a lobbyist and I did PR and I did plenty of interviews with papers and television news. I still needed a training in media because it was just coming at me left and right. And that was before the DEA proposal. And then, of course, there were a lot after.
The question in general, like, why is doing media important? I think it's pretty obvious.
And the reason that was so important was because at the time, so few people knew what Kratom was.
Yeah.
And still.
And they
so
still don't.
They still don't. If you ask people what it is, they'll usually say either they have no idea or they'll say, oh, you mean that stuff that's advertised in front of my gas station?
Absolutely, yeah.
it baffles me that there's no media campaign. That was the way that we got, you know, the general public to learn about Kratom. That was the way we got addicts who needed help to learn about Kratom. I can't tell you the number. It's in the hundreds of people who contacted me personally because they read my name in a story and they were addicted and they needed help. And at the time, I dropped everything to help people. I dropped everything I possibly could to help people, and I had some really good volunteers who helped manage the Facebook page so that I could drop everything to help people. But also with the media, I dropped everything because it was so important for us to get good stories out there. I remember Nick Wing was one of the big reporters at the Huffington Post. It used to be much different than it is now, but he was one of the first people to do an actual, very well-balanced, educated, journalistic piece on Kratom. And the first time I ever spoke to him, he didn't know what Kratom was. So talk about spending hours of time on the phone with a reporter. But then, of course, he talked to the full spectrum of people, from every opponent to every proponent and in between. He did a lot of good stories. We're missing good reporters like that because nobody's out there pursuing them. And nobody's doing interviews. I don't know what's happening. I don't know. I know there must be calls that are being made for interviews to be done. There have to be. This is a current issue. This is an issue that a lot of people pay attention to, and you would think that a lot more resources would be put into media. I just don't know where that's happening. I don't know where most resources go except to, you know, state bans, which I have my own thoughts and feelings about the Kratom Consumer Protection Act.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, because on the one hand, they seem good. Like, I think, like, a couple of the states, you're in Oregon now, the one there had actual funding allocated for enforcement, at least last, I haven't read the recent one, I think it might be passing, actually. But what is it about the consumer protection laws that could improve? Because I mean, I like the idea of it, of labeling, of not having any synthetic or adulterants in there, only being able to sell it to adults. And
right, I think there's a lot of positive in them. What's lacking is something that you just can't have a law without, and that's an enforcement mechanism. There is no enforcement mechanism whatsoever. So these laws are just being passed in name and name only. And there is no, except for, like you said, Oregon, and I think maybe there might be one coming out in Colorado that has an enforcement mechanism. There's no enforcement mechanism. So these are great in name, but you'll see states that have the Kratom Consumer Protection Act in force within counties in those states trying to ban it. So there's nobody out there making sure that these things are happening. Companies are voluntarily following these requirements for labeling and these age restrictions. Well, they can't follow the age restrictions if they're selling through to shops and they're not selling straight to the consumer. We could get a lot further, but the bills are a lot harder to pass with a fiscal component.
Do you think maybe they're like a good first step, though?
Definitely. They're a good first step. I like to look at them as the way the marijuana lobby came up, as these are very first little tiny baby steps in the effort to make Kratom legal as a whole in the United States. But the problem is each one of these bills costs so much money to pass. I mean, the cost of the lobbyists, the cost of travel, the cost of, it just doesn't add up. The money that's spent to go into laws that are in effect in name only, it just doesn't, it doesn't add up to me. I've been silent for a long time, but the one thing I haven't been silent about is that I don't think the money adds up. Pursuing the legislation costs a lot of money, and yet it's getting us places in name only. And so where is the rest of all of the money going? I mean, we know, we know about how much it costs to hire a lobby firm in a state, how much it costs about to pass a bill.
Yeah, but the Kratom money is from vendors. I donated $25 a month for a couple years until they threw me off their mailing list.
There used to be a time, and I don't know if this is still the time, but there used to be a time where we got more individuals as donors than we did vendors. And I should stop using the word we, because this is no longer we anymore. We're heading into the me and the AKA separate story. But no, what happened is I was ousted. I was ousted unfairly. I was accused of some things that I absolutely did not do. The only thing that I was guilty of was being too busy and being a sloppy record keeper.
Yeah, let me, can I read it?
Cause, sure.
So in 2017, you're accused by other, I guess they were board members or not, of in the AK, and we'll talk about that too. Okay, in 2017, you were accused by the other people in the AKA of financial improprieties. I'm reading from the Payne News Network article and from October 2017. So I'll read the statement, which you can't find on archive.org anymore, but the Payne News Network still has it. The preliminary financial review identified significant discrepancies and missing records and financial documentation for compensation and expense reimbursements paid to Ms. Ash over a significant time period. Several of the expenditures are substantial and have raised significant questions as to whether they were appropriate for reimbursement from donor funds. So
it just makes me laugh.
So what happened? I could go into that article. Dave Herman was saying, I didn't want this to happen, etc. So what's your side of this?
Hearing that again, I just have to laugh out loud. This was simple record keeping sloppiness. That statement sounds like there were thousands and thousands of dollars misappropriated. Keep in mind, I was only being paid a $1,000 stipend a month to work. The reason that stipend was only $1,000 is because I was receiving, and I still receive, Social Security disability benefits.
I actually have the 990s from the last year you were in. This is 2017. That year, it says you were paid $30,000. Upstream Consulting was paid $306,000 that year. So you were getting super rich from the AKA.
And what happened was I disobeyed a command. I was commanded to go back through 3 years of records that I already had line by line, expensed it all out, had it all explained. It didn't need to be done again. It would have taken months of my time, and I didn't have months of time to spare. I disobeyed an order. I didn't go back through the 3 years. I knew I didn't need to. I was so busy. And we had so little time for formal board meetings and things like that. It was just a little bit of sloppiness is what it was. That's all it was. They wanted me gone. We never planned on keeping people around very long. We signed contracts for 6 months and we thought we were going to only have some people around for 6 months. And I was clear that I thought this would be a 6 month job, but then it became clear to me that the work was being done. Now, don't get me wrong. I trusted everything Max Haddow said. I trusted his every word.
Okay. He was hired in that September?
Yes.
Okay.
He was hired that September.
And you thought it was going to be like a 6 month contract?
I did. Yeah. I thought it was going to be a 6 month because
with
I was
upstream consulting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I was going to be raising millions of dollars for years. That's not what I wanted to do. This was my organization. That's not what I wanted to do with it. When it came time to renew their contracts, we needed to renew them. We still had a big fight on our hands and we did have the money to renew them. Mac Haddow was instrumental in helping me to raise that money. But again, it was supposed to be temporary and I was supposed to transition from chair of the board, which I stepped down prior to all of this happening. I was to transition from director of the AKA because I remained the director to spokesperson. And that's why I'm on the boards as having a $30,000 salary because I was offered $38,000, I believe it was. Something like $38,000 to be the spokesperson for the organization. And at that time, I needed a break. And
yeah,
that's all I wanted to do.
I see $30,000 from 2017. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we had an agreement. It was either 38,000 sounds like the number, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
It might have been 48 because, you know, that was not all of the months of that year.
Okay.
So
yeah.
With my contract, seeing those salaries next to mine, it's just humiliating. I started the organization. I did, you know, most of the hiring. I did all of the hiring with a team, or I did have a team, of course. But I was behind all of the hiring and all of those decisions.
Yeah.
And to then be accused of things that are laughable, it destroyed my brain. It destroyed my spirit and it destroyed my heart when that happened. I did not think I was going to survive that period of my life. The AKA was my blood, sweat, and tears. I still have a hard time to this day, even though I truly don't care what people think about what happened because I know the truth and the truth is what matters. And if people decide to believe something other than the truth, that's their problem and not mine. But there was, you know, probably up until 8 months ago, I probably couldn't have had this conversation with you. I was still so hurt. You don't bring up an organization from the very baby grassroots. You don't put your blood, sweat, and tears into it. You don't spend 12, 14, 16, 18 hours, sometime days working. You don't travel the country and play whack-a-mole and put fires out and deal with the import alert. And you don't do all of that without coming away, without extracting a little blood and sweat and tears. And the blood, sweat, and tears that came from my ousting was, I thought that it was going to be unsurvivable. And yet I picked myself back up and I got to helping other organizations and other vendors. I helped vendors with their PR. I helped create a PR organization that lasted for a little while, but that didn't, the funding didn't last. It was called the Kratom Information Resource Center. And I was with the Kratom Trade Association for some time. And that was also an organization that's funding ran out. These were all right after I left the AKA.
Yeah.
Up until just 6 months ago, I was still helping some vendors with their messaging and with import issues.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about all these other groups. There's the Botanical Education Alliance, Kratom Trade Association, Kratom Information and Resource Center. I see all these, and none of them have been active for like 2 years or something. And it's like, what's happening to these other organizations to get started? I don't get it. I think there should be more organizations that can do other things.
I think they're giving up because a lot of these organizations are some of the same people that were involved since the beginning. I know Kratom Trade Association, or it might have been Kratom Trade Alliance at the time. I don't remember. That was people who were involved before. Those were people who were advocates before the AKA was even born. The Kratom Information Resource Center, that was my idea, and it was funded by a vendor who pulled out his money because he decided it was better used on a local level. So we just never got to raising money to fund them again. And I always planned on coming back through the Kratom Information Resource Center. I always had plans to come back to this day. I thought I was going to come back through that because it was going to be a media organization focusing solely on media. And unfortunately, the head of the public relations group that was helping to run Kratom Information Resource Center passed away. And that was devastating, and the future of the Kratom Information Resource Center was, when he passed away, it passed away with him, unfortunately. Yeah. So all of these organizations come around and they try, and I think they see, one, they think the work is being done. They think far more work is being done that's actually being done, because when you look at the work that's actually being done, it doesn't compare to the kind of work that was being done back in 2015, 2016, 2017.
I want to preface this next part by saying the information about money and payments we're referring to is primarily from an investigation by the journalist Edward Erickson, published in Courthouse News, and the link is posted in the description. You were a Kratom user yourself, and it was just a more sincere grassroots movement. He does good work with the laws. I mean, he goes and lobbies and gives them a word pretzel and gets these guys to maybe pass some of these laws.
I don't think people realize that. I trusted Mac. I trusted everything he said to me up to the day that I was accused of misappropriating funds. I trusted everything about Mac Haddow, and I thought that he was, and I still think that he was, a godsend to the movement. But no, when I'm told that he's made $1.4 million in the last couple of years, that breaks my heart, because that means that the AKA is not the organization that it once was. It's no longer a grassroots organization. No grassroots organization would pay anybody that amount of money.
My problem is, okay, that could afford a lot of other lobbyists that does what he does.
Precisely.
Not with the skill and experience, but effectively, if they're sincere, and it also could support better media. I had no knowledge of any of this when I got into this. I got hired in 2018 right about Kratom. I started the podcast in fall of 2019, and I was like, oh man, I'm gonna just do this podcast for like 10 episodes at least, and then I'll work up like the skills to interview somebody like Mac Hatto or the bigger players, and then I start getting this messaging where, oh, this guy supports us, but he's not. I don't know if he meant me, but if he was talking about somebody, and I was like, that's weird. And he's like there's a divide in the Kratom community, and I'm like, I have no idea about any of this. I'm a newbie. I'm trying to expand it. So that was like one of the main questions about, like, it seemed like an elitist thing where they didn't want me or somebody like me or to interview other people, and yeah. Aren't we supposed to expand this thing so more people be educated? And that's all I was trying to do. I wasn't trying to be a big whatever, you know, and I was just trying to interview people and just like get the word out. That's always been my goal. Mm-hmm. And it's just counterproductive to me in general. I mean, I don't know all about the money and the laws and all that shit, but it just turned me off. And then I kept digging and digging. I mean, I've already done the Google thing with him, you know, with the thing in the 80s with T-Bear, yeah, and all that stuff. Anybody can Google that that's even curious. But I was like, okay, whatever, you know.
I did hire him knowing that happened.
Of course, because like every other guy is like that in Washington.
I knew we needed Senator Hatch, and yeah, I knew we had a straight line to Senator Hatch, and I knew we needed Mac Hatto because he was the only lobbyist in the country that knew what Kratom was about, and we had 30 days to fight this ban. So it was, you know, quick decision making on my part, but like I said in the beginning, I trusted every word from his mouth. I trusted every recommendation, every suggestion. Sometimes, of course, we would have disagreements as people who work in the same organizations did. And if I felt strongly about an issue and he felt strongly about an issue, if it came down to it with me as director, I would have the ultimate say. But I trusted him. As a former lobbyist, I think I was only registered in one state a long time ago, but I was a lobbyist. I would go to DC and lobby on forest issues and endangered species and wilderness issues.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would come here to Oregon and I would go to Salem and lobby here. But as a lobbyist, I know that you can train someone in a very short amount of time to learn this Kratom issue. There should be money that goes to media. And we see a little bit of media. I saw some commercials.
They recently did some more of those good commercials that I like, actually, because it's Kratom stories. That's what I started to do when I started writing. I just wanted to get people's stories because we had so many written on our website.
Great. It's great to have those commercials. But you just wonder, how many commercials could we have gotten had $1.4 million not gone into the pockets of staff?
According to that report,
it's not just Mac Hatto who's receiving these enormous amounts of money. It's Pete Canlin who is receiving the amount of money for doing administrative tasks. They've been friends for decades.
Yeah.
And fellow supporters. I don't think it's a coincidence that the board of the AKA is Mormon. I think that I find it very interesting. I think it's an interesting coincidence that one of their board members, Jamie Ziegler, is somebody who Matt Caddow converted to Mormonism. That's what I was told by a reporter. Yeah. I don't know that firsthand.
And he's not necessarily a bad guy. He was Matt Caddow's mailman, as far as I know. And he got on the board of Kratom. And by the way, it's Happy International Women's Day. I don't see any women on the board there, and there used to be you. And there's so many good women advocates, and I think they should be on that board in front of somebody's mailman. That's just my opinion. I don't know anything about nonprofits, but I don't know.
We had two women on the board with me. I'm told they were offered contract positions. This is how the AKA gets away with not having employees, is they offer people contract positions. Mm-hmm. And so they don't have to worry about benefits and taxes. It's on the burden of the person that's hired. So the women were offered contract positions, as far as I know, to come off the board. And then something I was told, and this is just a funny joke, I don't know if it's true or not, but I was told that the mail carrier was brought on board because he's an expert in importing and exporting. And I'm sorry.
That's written somewhere. That is actually written somewhere. Yeah.
That is something that I find funny. And he's a mail person. Of course he's going to be
nothing against him. But that is just an indication of we are hiding something. Yes. Everything. It's like I was all gung-ho, but I didn't know the history. I saw Leaf of Faith. And I was all gung-ho. Like, Mac seemed to be so, like, awesome at, getting the laws passed and talking a good game. And I'm like, all right, he's like an attack. And he is, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I like this guy. And but then he started acting like he had something to hide, and he just kept and just for no reason. And it was like not a good reason. Why are you like, you're turning me off as a newbie? I don't understand why you are, but as somebody who's writing about this issue, it's only my job to wonder the fuck why.
I have gone back and forth and back and forth between supporting the AKA and questioning their tactics and supporting them and questioning their tactics. And what ultimately got me to completely distrust what they were doing was when I read that in order to become a volunteer serve on the AKA with the AKA, you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
And this was the Kratom Consumer Council. I just wanted to tell everybody that. But yeah, go ahead.
And that ultimately is what got me to say there's something wrong here. If they're getting their volunteers to sign non-disclosure agreements, there's no such thing in the world. I don't care what kind of nonprofit you are that's a consumer-based, that's got consumer advocacy in your name and in your mission. There's nothing that requires highly confidential information unless you're lobbying and you're going to meet with an actual senator or a House member or something like that. There's nothing that would require a non-disclosure agreement except maybe talking negative about the organization that you're volunteering for. And I feel like that to me made it look like they were trying to cover up something. And that's when I decided, I have all of these people on my friends list who have been on my friends list for 5 years, 7 years, 8 years, who have all got ties to the AKA, and most of these people have signed this agreement. And I just couldn't have those people on my friends list. And apparently it caused quite a stir because it was covered in a newspaper article. It was noted that that was the main reason that I parted ways and started not paying attention to really to what they were doing anymore, because I just couldn't in good faith continue on knowing that these people signed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was like volunteered to do the Kratom Consumer Council. I met with a representative here. I met with a staffer and it was cool. And I didn't sign that thing because I'm like, I can't do my job if I'm going to sign this. I'm going to write about whatever the fuck I want. Indonesia, you went over there. We should pray for this. I'll say 95%, I guess, the number that we've all heard and are sticking to of the kratom that is purchased in the United States comes from Indonesia. A lot of those farmers are being screwed by American businesses. I think they're like purposely driving down the cost of kratom. What's going on with Indonesia? And talk about like the organizations you've been part of to try to make it more just for the farmers.
First time when I went to Indonesia back in 2016, I met with the very first organization they had, and it was called the AKB. So it was a funny little coincidence. It was AKB, something Kratom Borneo it stood for. I think it was Association Kratom Borneo. I don't know. And then the AKA, and I went over and I gave them a presentation on the issues we were facing in the United States, to make Kratom, because it's to have it be so controversial. And we talked about the import alert, and we talked about how we could work to get the folks in Indonesia to have cleaner markets so that their products would test, had a higher quality, and not come over to the United States with things like mold or salmonella. So we used to work together in trying to get the Indonesians to modernize their equipment, and a lot of Indonesians are very interested in this. They want to buy the expensive equipment. They're forming farmers co-ops in hopes that they can buy expensive equipment so that, you know, heavy metals aren't found in product. I couldn't tell you why there have been so many organizations, so many different organizations. They went from being called Pekrindo, P-E-K-R-I-N-D-O, and that stands for something over in Indonesia that I can't remember now.
Yeah, you were involved in that.
Yes.
Some of the pictures of you in Indonesia was you were meeting with Pekrindo, I think.
Yes, right? Those were the folks that started out as the AKB, and they turned into Pekrindo. PPHI are the folks that I was working with recently. They were working to get labor costs higher because folks that are out in the field that are picking kratom leaves are being paid labor's wages, and there's not enough to support a family. They keep forming organizations, and I think they have problems with funding as well. And then they'll have disagreements, and then they'll end up like some of the organizations here in the United States, that some of them will go defunct. But
And I heard it's really just businesses taking advantage of poverty there, because some farmers will just be like, yeah, I'll sell this for $1 a kilo. And it's really just like the old story of like, you know, community versus big money coming in and flim-flam.
It is. And then I have heard that there have been talk that involve Americans going over and trying to set the price where wages would be fair for some of the farmers. But I don't know how successful those talks have been.
Yeah. I guess equivalency would be, like, for people listening and trying to understand the issue, would be like Fair Trade Coffee tries to do the same thing. They try to give the small farmers a good price. If you buy it, you're helping out small farms.
Yes, those are the kind of folks that I kept in touch with that I've been speaking to up until about 6 months ago. The Indonesians keep forming co-ops.
Why does this keep happening? Because I interviewed these, and all these guys seemed like so sincere about it. Yeah. And I just wonder why these groups keep breaking up.
The goal of most of the Indonesian leaders and the ones that are at the highest level of power in their business do want to see their local farmers, those that actually are out there picking the leaves, they want to see them have a living wage. But what's happening is the price in America is so low that it doesn't allow for them to give their farmers living wages. And so this is the issue that they face on a daily basis. That's what these folks were talking with you about.
Yeah.
And that was, how can they survive on a non-living wage? And that's where vendors in America come in, and vendors really should be giving them, it's mostly the non-GMP vendors that come in. They offer a ridiculously low price to the American public. So they're making it impossible for Indonesians to pay their laborers fair labor, because it's all of these non-GMP companies that sell kilos for, I don't even know how much a regular kilo goes, something like $60 a kilo, which is ridiculously cheap. Some are down to $45 a kilo, and you never know what you're going to get. And that's why it's so important to buy from people stateside who test their products and who can provide you batch number and test results for what you're buying, because you never want to buy product that you don't know what's in it. I had my own problem with a company that I was working with a product that I was endorsing. And I found out that there were fillers in it, and I had to part ways with that company. And you just never want to be in a position like that. What's happening is these non-GMP vendors, because it costs a lot of money to be GMP compliant. I mean, I've heard to be a GMP compliant vendor for the AKA now, suddenly you have to pay $5,000. That's just one small bit of the cost of operating GMP. And it used to be $500. Of course, you want to be listed. Everybody wants to be listed.
And even like full alkaloid profile on the label. Yes. I think that's, I mean, there just isn't the lab infrastructure. And I've talked about this with John Cachet, who's my partner with the Kratom Science Journal Club. He builds cannabis testing labs in Ohio. And he said, you know, there's lab shopping and everything. And he said, he's like, there just isn't the infrastructure to have a full alkaloid profile labs for Kratom in the States yet, which, you know, obviously not. It would be a lot cooler if there was.
Yes, it would be. Yeah. It would be.
So we could do away with this whole idea of strains.
Yeah, there are companies out there now that are getting more than 10 alkaloids tested. There are a couple, at least, that I know of. I believe it, there's a specialty lab that is becoming better and better at testing kratom and adding more and more alkaloids. And I could be way off when I say 10. I don't even know, but there's a lab called Murphy Brown Labs.
10 would be more than enough, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, maybe, I can't remember if it's 5 to 10. There are labs out there that are proficient in testing more than the metragenine and the 7-hydroxymetragenine. They're just very, very expensive. If we could get more and more companies testing these alkaloids, it would be a lot less expensive. And just like what's going on in Indonesia, if we could get more and more companies paying living wages and not selling kilos to non-GMP vendors for so cheap that they're putting their own people out of business, then we could have better wages both ways and better information about the product that we're consuming both ways. It was fun to go to Indonesia too, because the Indonesian culture, they're so friendly. And when you meet them once, they treat you like family. And that's why I've been in touch with the Indonesians for this long, is because once you meet them, they treat you as a friend for life.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to help them with their problems, and I haven't had much success. You know, I've been trying to get them to be suppliers to certain companies. I've had some successes in some places, and I have not had any success in others to get the living wage issue resolved. It is a trip going to Indonesia and seeing the kratom in the raw form, because you're looking at plantations where obviously they're purposefully planting kratom, and it's in rows just like corn plantation here. And then you go to these wild areas where it's completely in the rough and in the raw, and you're in the mud and there are no roads. You've got Indonesians picking kratom from their little motorbikes, and it is really, really hard labor. And these folks need to be rewarded with living wage.
2021. We were getting all these emails from the AKA, and because I was angry, you know, kratom's going to be illegal
in a month.
Next month, in 30 days. There was one that actually said it'll be illegal in 30 days. In May 2021, they sent out something that said something about a blood sport and the divide in the kratom community. That by the time they sent that out, I knew what they were talking about, but this whole divide thing was like, what the fuck? And like anybody that was like conscientious that had or have paid attention to the AKA since at least when I did, which is fall of 2018, like, what is this? What are they doing? What are they hiding? And so you wrote about that on your Facebook and all that. And you just said, I wondered why a posting announcing my exit and a little comedy was being lumped in with an alleged blood battle, or they actually said blood sport, I think, and I was suddenly under attack by old friends and allies. Now, right after this is when we start corresponding, and so...
Yeah.
Like, what happened there, and, like, what'd you go through? Because every time panics happen, and I have a guy that always emails me, this guy, he would, like, be scared kratom was going to be outlawed in a month. And I'm like, this poor guy is traumatized. I just feel like with every one of these scare things, they're taking advantage of traumatized people to get donations. And they're dancing around like gold prospectors every time they send one of these out, and they get... They suddenly get a rash of thousands of dollars or whatever.
What happened was I was in a group and I made a comment that said, there was no way that Kratom was going to be banned in 30 days. And that I thought that the folks who support AKA deserved an apology, because I didn't think that was fair. And that was also when I decided to part ways with anyone who had signed the non-disclosure agreement with the AKA. And that was hard to do because a lot of those people were people that I respect who now dislike me very much because they see me as a disruptor when I'm just a fact teller. I'm not trying to disrupt anything. I'm trying to give the history and say where I think resources could be better allocated. And I'm just being realistic about how the legislation that's been pursued so far is just legislation in name and needs a little bit more work to be enforced. I took the bloodbath to refer to me and I think even you. I think you had done an article that might have said something negative. I don't remember, but I took it to me.
What I did was at the WHO time. I just said, why can't you comment right to the Federal Register? That's all I said.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, so it was prior to that, and it was just me, and it was a comment I made. And the reason that I thought it was directed at me in the blood sport is because I had all of these people who used to be friends come on my personal page and cuss me out for saying negative things about the AKA. And that was simply from calling them out, saying Kratom is not going to be banned in 30 days. And I don't want to have anything to do with anybody who has signed this non-disclosure agreement because I'm fed up. I'm fed up at them telling people that you've got 30 days for Kratom and you're causing a panic. I'm fed up with the amount of money that they're paying their not staff, but contractors. I'm fed up that they would call a little comment that I made. They used to do this all the time with things that I said. They would call that a bloodbath. I mean, who am I? I'm just a girl named Susan Ash who happened to found the AKA, who sometimes shared her opinions. Very rarely, very, very rarely did I share my opinions, because I, honest to God, when I was accused of all that led to my ousting, I had a lawsuit. I had a defamation case there. And I chose not to pursue it because I cared far more about the plant than I did about my own reputation. Now, it led to some really down times for me, and it led to me being the victim of a lot of hatred and a lot of accusations that just there was no proof of. The last one, that bloodbath thing, I think it was just an excuse to get more money. I think they felt threatened. And whenever they feel threatened by somebody that has a different opinion, they'll call it a war or a bloodbath.
Yeah.
And they'll circle their troops.
This is my main, because I wouldn't even have looked into this if they were just putting out good messaging, and I probably wouldn't even have looked into it because I was all gung-ho about them right when I started. It was like in March 2020 when COVID started, and then they come out with this like extreme, because they were worried about their funds drying up, I guess, because I was worried about my funds drying up. I was like buying, I was like, oh, we gotta buy greens, we gotta go buy beans, let's, and I understood it was like a frenzied time, but there's traumatized people in this community. They're either traumatized from chronic pain, or they're traumatized from drug addiction and some kind of trauma that usually causes drug addiction. And then it got to a breaking point during that COVID webinar, and I was like, the fuck is going on here? I didn't talk about them on here because of the same reason you said, because I don't want it to hurt.
Right.
You know, is it best to even call somebody out in public, or I don't know, it's like a cult-like thing of controlling people with fear, and there's vulnerable people in this community, and it stems from, like, my guys from Kratom Science paid for me to go take drug and alcohol counseling classes because I felt like I should, because I was interviewing a lot of former addicts. I want to be more knowledgeable, and I was basically updated. I had heroin addict friends, you know, I never judged them.
Yeah.
And they always could talk to me about it. And that's why I was like, when I started remembering them, because it had been years since I've been in touch with them, but I started remembering them when I interviewed people about Kratom, because they're like, yeah, I could talk to you. And they're like telling me all their deepest secrets, like on this podcast. And I'm like, wow, that's like a responsibility that I have to, I should like learn more about what they're going through. So these guys spent $1,400 for me to go to classes at community college. There are people that want to help people in this space, and there are other people who see vulnerable people and think, I could take advantage. What can people do? Because lobbying is nothing but going to talk to people. It just takes money to fly there and talk to them. It
takes a lot of effort, but what they need to do is write to their congresspeople. First, they can write to their state representatives, because at the state level seems to be the only level that we ever deal with. We haven't seen any federal legislation. People can write their stories, their testimonies to their state representatives, and they don't even have to have a bill number. It can just be an educational letter. And they can say, this has been my experience with Kratom. There's been some controversial information put out about this, but here's my experience. And it saved my life, and it got me off of opioids, and or it's helped with my pain. It's helped with my anxiety. Federal, they can also send their stories and say they just are writing to make sure that nothing happens on the federal level to ban Kratom. And they could be, you know, educating their legislators for the first time on Kratom issue. Who knows? We know that not every single legislator has been introduced to Kratom, because not every single legislator has heard of it. Then also, they should be watching what their city councils are doing, looking at things on a municipal level or a city council level. They can be writing and just saying, this is my story. You may have heard of this leaf that comes from Southeast Asia. And it's in the coffee family, and it's something that has helped change my life and made me a productive member of society. That's the most important thing that legislators want to hear. First of all, you need to make sure that you're a registered voter, because if you're not a registered voter, they're not really going to pay much attention to you, because you're not one of their constituents, excuse me. So, you know, you want to mention you're a registered voter in their district, and this is Kratom. This is what it's done for you. This is what you fear. You fear that it may be banned. And these are the reasons why you think it shouldn't be banned. And you should have some links to some current science, because there's a lot of new stuff that's coming out that's good to use. If you have legislation in your state and you can get a meeting with your legislator, all the power to you. And there are guides out there that are guides to lobbying. I wrote a guide to lobbying for Kratom that if anyone wanted, I'd be happy to give to them. You can do this on your own. If you can get a meeting with your state representative, you don't need anybody's permission to do that. Yeah. You can go do it all on your own.
That's a good message.
It seems like people think you need permission when you
from organizations
really
that you're donating to. Yeah.
Exactly. You absolutely do not need permission to go talk to your state representative about Kratom. And it's important that you do so if you're in a state that has a ban that's proposed. It's important that you do talk to your state representative. It's important that you do talk to your House of Congress member or your Senate or your senator if there's anything federal that comes along. But yeah, you absolutely do not need permission to lobby. It's easier than you think. It's more about being polite and telling your story than anything else. Really, really being polite and having a story that is going to influence your state legislator because it's going to get sympathy. A lot of them are shocked that this plant can help people get out of heroin addiction. Stories like that are what make or break a bill. It's all about the constituent. These people work for you. These congresspeople work for you. So remember that when you're going in to talk to them. You be polite, you tell your story, but remember they work for you. And it's their job to listen to you. So the more people that we have going in to talk to our legislators about this issue, the more important they're going to hold it, the more attention they're going to give it, and the more likely they're not going to be on board with a ban if they hear these success stories.
So as far as like media, what do you think needs to be done? Like, I have this little podcast. I mean, I hope we have a couple thousand listeners on a good day. But what can you do with like a media platform that you would like to see?
So there are some little things that people can do. One little thing that's not that little, but it is little when you think about it because it's only 165 words, is you can write a letter to the editor of your paper. If your paper writes an article about the opioid addiction problem or anything that you can relate it to Kratom, you can write a letter to the editor, and it's just 165 letters, and you tell your experience, and you know that they will sometimes publish letters that don't have to do with articles that they've written, but if they're more likely to publish letters to the editor if they relate to articles that have been written by the paper. But that's one thing you can do. Another thing you can do is write a get together with, say, you're friends with a scientist or a doctor, and or you just want to do it yourself, you can write a whole opinion editorial, which is much longer, and it's covered in the paper.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and you write an opinion piece, so you get more words, and you can say more.
Especially a lot of these small papers, they are looking for content all the time.
All the time.
And if you give them free content, that's good for them.
Yes, 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 yes. I mean, because there's not going to be a week that goes by without a paper saying something about an opioid or opioid addiction or opioid. It seems like it, at least lately. And so look for those articles in the papers, and then look for those are your chance to write a letter to the editors to say, this is what helped me, and I'm afraid that it's going to be banned. You know, you tell your story in 165 letters, and it's hard. It's a short amount of space, but you know, you hit on the highlights: your age, your profession, what you do as a productive member of society, and your location. That's free media. And then if you see a story that comes out about Kratom that's negative, which we see all the time, you can write to the reporter and say, you know, your facts are off. Don't be rude. The Kratom community has a bad habit of being really rude to reporters if they get something wrong. And that's sort of our fatal flaw, is that we tend to be rude when we see people who disagree with our position on Kratom. You don't want to be rude. You want to approach a reporter and say, I think you've got something that's inaccurate. And this is my story. And here are some links to new science that you may not be aware of. And maybe you could write a correction piece or, you know, a follow-up article to share the other side. You know, the number of times that I did that and was successful when I was with the AKA was phenomenal. We got all kinds of new articles, and a couple of times we got actual television stories. A couple of times we would get stories that would come out about the new heroin, and we would write in and we'd say, this is inaccurate. This is a leaf in the coffee family. This is my story. And they'd say, hey, okay, well, can you find me someone who can, I can interview locally who can talk to me about this? And we would always have, and this is talking about back when I was with the AKA and we were working media so hard, we would always have a list of people in different states that we could call upon who, if there was a bad newspaper story or if there was a bad television story, that we would have a list of people we could rely on to go and correct those stories. We could be on standby to do interviews. So if you live in a place where a bad story comes out, a bad television or newspaper, then you request that, you know, you tell your story and you request that another story be told from the other side. Because, and if it's a good reporter and it's a fair reporter, they're gonna follow up.
And they're looking for content too. That's the thing.
Yes. And especially something unique that has to do with this opioid issue, because they're probably so sick of covering it that it would be nice to give them
a recovered story.
Yeah, exactly. I recovered story and that kind of angle. Those are just some simple ways. If you're going to take on the television interview, then you want to be trained by somebody. You want to just get advice from somebody before you do so, because there are certain do's and don'ts when you are on television and things like that. But I'm still out here. I'm still out helping people who want advice, who need advice. I'm not employed. I am still dealing with health issues. So I still have time to help people who want help, who need help, who think that things can be done a little bit differently. I went away for a little while because I just got so frustrated, but I'm still here and I'm still a resource that people can use if they'd like to use me. Just Susan, D as in doll, Ash at gmail.com. And if somebody would like help in their community or help in their state, I'm here and willing to help. The Consumer's Voice has been silent too long, and it's really time to bring it back to the consumer. That's who makes the decision makers listen in the first place, and that's who they're going to listen to in the future, no matter what organization is around. It's up to the consumer who